Welcome to Apple at Work, the podcast all about Apple and the enterprise. My name is Bradley Chambers, your host. This week I have on the show Chris Ulrich from Cognition. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Bradley.
So back in on October 1st, your company put out a press release. I think in probably 10 years, 5, 10 years from now, may look back and we'll kind of feel this is like the beginning of a new epoch in terms of technology and how we view technology, how it impacts the world. Because I think a lot of technology is fun, communication, entertainment's great, but then there's also some really life-changing things I think we're at the cusp of. So just to kind of kick us off the show, can you tell us like really who is Cognition?
Sure. Yeah, Cognition is we're a startup company. We're based in Santa Barbara, California. The company was founded just over 10 years ago, actually. And thus kind of the founding mission and vision of the company is to enable communication for persons with communication disabilities. That's really the kind of the original thesis of the company. And the company started, like, looked at a bunch of different ways to try to do that, but eventually settled on the notion of having a kind of a wearable interface as being the right form factor. But the real activity that we're doing here is trying to innovate and figure out new ways to enable people who may have communication or human-machine interface impairments, disabilities, to be able to communicate with their loved ones, to communicate with their caregivers, but also to be productive and to sort of reclaim their life and their agency. That's really our mission and our goal as a company.
Well, when I first read this press release, it was my first exposure to the company. It's really that we're on that cusp of really the technology that you all have envisioned. It really feels like it's here. Mm-hmm. And you all are launching a clinical study talking about using Apple Vision Pro for people with ALS, spinal cord injury, stroke, and other concerns. I guess to start, when your team first saw Apple's unveiling of the Vision Pro, was this one of those like this is what we've been wanting from a technology point of view?
I think so. I think that's the right way to think about it. As a company working in this area since 2018, 2017 timeframe, we had to do a lot of this stuff ourselves because there really was no good off-the-shelf solutions. And then when you're working on medical devices, there's a lot of things you have to worry about in terms of quality, but also in terms of the integrity and consistency of the infrastructure, the hardware that you're using. And so really what we had planned to do was to kind of roll our own in a sense, right? And so we had built our own augmented reality display system, built our own software stack, built our own sensor apparatus for the entire system. But when we saw the Vision Pro come to or get unveiled, like whatever it was 2 years ago, we were really sort of captivated by the idea that this may kind of shortcut us to getting to market. And the reason is because, Apple's very well known for having extremely high build quality, thoughtful design, but also, paying a lot of attention to the accessibility component of their systems. They have a very deep sort of corporate ethos around ensuring inclusiveness and usability of their products across a wide variety of types of users. And so from an ethos perspective, it's really a great sort of meeting of minds, if you like, in the sense that our goal is really to solve problems for these people. But Apple has, baked that into their design philosophy. And so when we think about, if we want to add, brain sensing and then accessibility software stack on top of that, it's probably one of the best choices that we could make, assuming that we're able to do everything we need to do from a medical device perspective. And so that was really exciting to us was, hey, maybe there's something there that we can dig into and that will save us, maybe a year to get to market from a medical device perspective.
So when you all were looking at this clinical study, is there any particular features? I mean, obviously the hardware is one thing, but then Vision OS is a whole other thing. The hardware obviously changes a little bit more slowly than the software. Apple continue to update Vision OS. Of course, just as this recording just yesterday, Apple announced a new version of Vision Pro with the updated chip. But is there anything specific in Vision OS that really drew you all to it?
There's a couple things about it. So one of the things that's really important, maybe not Vision OS, but let me start at the platform level. One of the things that's really important about persons, like, for example, persons with ALS that were enrolling in this kind of study, you have to understand that they, by and large, are locked in. They can't move their heads. They can only move their eyes a little bit. And other than that, they have no other motor control whatsoever in their body. But their mind is fully active and aware. And they're like, you know, just as thoughtful and considered as any normal person. And so the issue here is, how do you give them a device that doesn't, or give them a tool that doesn't interfere with their ability to be present or to feel present in the world that they're in? And one of the things that Apple did a tremendous job of in the Vision Pro was the video pass-through functionality. You know, clearly they spent a lot of time and effort on this to make it really functional. And in fact, when you put the device on it, you kind of feel like you haven't left the world, if you like, when you turn the pass-through on. And that sort of staging of the world around you and the ability to still see and interact with persons that may be nearby you is really a central and necessary and essential component of that system. It's sort of worth noting that in our own system that we developed, we actually went with an optical pass-through display specifically for that reason, because we wanted users to feel like they were present in the environment that they were in. And so the fact that, you know, Apple has thought this through and spent clearly a lot of time and effort, money to make that system really functional and performant is really a key sort of foundation for us to be able to use that kind of platform. Building on top of that, of course, in Vision OS, it's pretty clear that there was a lot of thinking going into how to enable XR interaction for persons with accessibility needs. And if you sort of scroll through the WWDC dev channels on accessibility for Vision OS, there's tons of videos about different thoughtful ways that they've enabled things like switch control and dwell, and, you know, eye tracking to control everything kind of situation. That clearly they spent a lot of time thinking about, and enabling and testing and making sure it was functional. And so for us, it's like a natural segue, or it's just kind of a natural place for us to slide in, is to augment those capabilities with some of the additional functionality that we add, like brain sensing, but also the AI component that's built on top of that.
This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Muzzle. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Mozilla is the only Apple unified platform for business. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Mozilla is more than an Apple MDM. Mozilla is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozle.com. That's business.mozle.com. Thanks to Mozle for sponsoring Apple at Work this week.
Well, and then you all are looking at this from a non-surgery perspective, and I think that is really critical. And that's one of the things that stuck out to me when I first read the release is you know, kind of the excitement around this. And again, I agree. Apple's done an incredible job. Gosh, as long as I can remember of accessibility being at the core of how it builds its product, like everything is built with accessibility in mind, and there's never a thing that's like, oh, this is a bolt on, this is an add on. It's just always been core to every OS it breaks out. And I think Vision OS was the first OS we've seen from new OS we've seen from Apple in nearly two decades, and seeing bringing everything they built and believe about accessibility to it from the ground up, I think it's really, really important. From a research standpoint, with this study, obviously, the patient's going to enroll now, and the study is expected to run through April of next year. What are you all hoping to uncover about how spatial computing can be used to improve communication independence for people that have a variety of neurological conditions?
Yeah. If I can just expound on your point a little, beginning your question a little bit more, but then I'll answer the second part. From a perspective of accessibility functionality, the thing that a lot of people don't appreciate, I don't think, and maybe they do, and I don't realize it, is that a lot of accessibility features are actually generally usable, right? So the best example is probably subtitles, right? Which was introduced for people who are hard of hearing, like on TV or whatnot. But it turns out that I think I read somewhere that like something like 20 to 30% of people watch, even persons that don't have hearing disabilities, watch TV or videos with subtitles on. Right. And that's because they might be in an environment where that's not appropriate to have volume. Might be they're just, you know, they're having trouble hearing because it's noisy. Like there's a lot of situational disabilities that drive demand for accessibility features that may not just be for persons who have, you know, physical disabilities. And I think that's a really important thing to understand about why someone like Apple might want to invest heavily in accessibility, is because it generally increases the usability of the product overall. And it makes it more versatile in that sense. From a study perspective, you know, we're really excited. We actually just wrapped up a kind of a precursor study this month, looking at just ALS participants. But really, from a clinical trial perspective, this study is known as a device feasibility study. And the goal of a device feasibility study is to identify and determine and refine the functionality of the device so that it can be maximally efficacious for the users, right? So your audience may not be familiar with medical device terminology, but from an FDA clearance perspective, it's really the two things the FDA cares about are safety and efficacy. And so when you go to the FDA and say, hey, please clear my thing as a medical device, they're going to look for scientific evidence that your device is safe and then it has some effect, right? And so if you can prove those two things from a scientific basis, you're typically good to go with the FDA. From our perspective, because the device is wearable, there's not really any major serious safety considerations. There are some, of course, but not like getting a brain surgery, for example, which has other safety considerations around it for like an implant, let's say. But for us, the biggest concern is efficacy. And so what we're trying to do in this study is to really focus on iterative refinement of the interface, iterative refinement of the AI component, which is sort of helping co-pilot the user as they interact with the system, refine the usability from the interaction primitives to the, you know, how does the AI serve up choices, all the way up to, you know, is the user using the device so many hours per week versus other available technologies that they could use. All this sort of information will help us to decide what are the key productizable features that drive efficacy of our solution. Once we finish that, then we can move into something called a pivotal trial, which would probably be in the April to May timeframe next year would start. A pivotal trial that's like the real, you know, randomized double blind control trial where you have very specific and high rigor around the way the study is executed.
Now, you know, thinking ahead, putting your dream vision on, where are we at in 10 to 15 years? You know, assuming Moore's Law, you know, everything gets better, faster, smaller. Where do you see this industry going? What do you think is possible?
Yeah, I think, well, the thing that's really exciting to me and one of the reasons why I was drawn to Cognition when I came over here is really that I believe we're kind of on the cusp or on the edge of a paradigm shift in human-machine interaction. And, you know, if you think about it, for the last more than 50 years, actually, that goes back to, there's like a famous demo that happened in San Francisco in 1965 or something of the mouse and keyboard. Right. And that's kind of been a defining interface principle for computers for 50 plus years. That, like, literally you don't use a computer without a mouse and keyboard or some proxy or equivalent, right? Even if you're on a tablet, you still have a keyboard, and you still have a touchscreen for pointing. When I see things like XR devices like the Vision Pro, but also the AI driven glasses like the Ray-Bans from Meta, what I see is a new computing paradigm in which you're talking about something that a mouse and keyboard doesn't actually make sense. You could do it, but it would be sort of silly. But at the same time, the alternatives are not that obvious. And I think it's really been sort of serendipitous that large language models sort of came into their own in the last 3-4 years around the same time as these AR systems became a little bit more mass market friendly. Because I do think that the marriage of an AI system that understands the context of the environment you're in, like, you know, where are you in space? What time of day is it? What activities are you doing at this time of day? With the sort of productivity or activity you're engaged in, with some mechanism for you to interact or supervise or control or drive or interface with that system through speech, through biosignals, through brain sensing, that's really the sort of trifecta that's going to drive the future of human machine interaction. And so, you know, maybe it may sound like fantastic, but I don't see any reason why we can't move in the direction, especially in the 10-year timeframe, in the direction of, you know, completely unencumbered computing, where we have at least as much, if not more, productivity capability as we have today. And I think those are the technologies that are going to drive us to that place.
No, I agree with that. I've talked to people in past episodes of this podcast and even just personally offline. I think about, you know, where we're at with AirPods. And to me, that's also one of the more interesting computing platforms in the future. I mean, you like watch Star Trek and you're, you know, you know, like, okay, if that we think the future might look like, you know, you can see a world where, you know, maybe a single AirPod that's incredibly small all day long. And it's like it, you know, where it's a battery life, you know, it kind of has the battery life of an Apple Watch, but what it can do, and again, not even just in assistive technology, but just even in terms of productivity of like, you know, proactively kind of, you know, or passively, but proactively giving you things that you need to know throughout the day. It's always one of those, like, I think we maybe overestimate, maybe 12 months, but we really, I think, are underestimating the next 12 years of technology and what it can be, where it can be, where it's so passive, but it's also all day long. I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, I think we're one of the sort of driving philosophies of cognition is that if we focus ourselves really like diligently on the ultra hard problem of accessibility for persons who have no choice, right? So our users who have late stage ALS or who have brainstem stroke or, you know, traumatic brain injury, they really don't have a choice, right? They're kind of stuck with what they have. But they really want to be productive and engaged and participants in society and culture and so on. And so if we're able to solve the problem for them, that where they can actually get back to being a productive, and they can be engaged and all that kind of stuff, and we figure out that interface issue, we're 100% convinced that those solutions will trickle down and actually impact the mass market interface technologies that are coming in the next 10 years.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. Like it's like you kind of want to, you got to enjoy life, but then you're like, I know, I just want to get to like where that, because you know that's technology's coming and it will be built. You've got to kind of, you know, iterate every single year and you do make new discoveries. I'm thrilled. Chris, this has been a great conversation. Thanks for taking the time. We're going to have a link in the show notes to the press release. It has all the information about it. Again, I think everybody, especially in the quote-unquote tech press, is looking at Vision Pro. And it's not a device that today I want to choose to wear. But you can see where this world is going. I told someone last week, it's like you don't get the laptops we have today unless you had the laptops in the 80s first. And you have to kind of start somewhere, and then you can kind of just iterate year after year. And I don't think that I think we are vastly underestimating the next 10 years or so of what this technology you can choose to wear all day long is going to do. So, Chris, thanks for taking the time to chat, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Apple at Work. Thanks for everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Awesome. Thank you.